Agenda Mamul Shiva Agenda.
Yes.
Okay. Any objection? None. Abstentions? None. Can I then declare Honorable Shiva as a duly elected acting chairperson for this meeting? Over to you.
Thank you, honorable members, and your confidence in me that I can run this thing on Tuesday. Is it Tuesday the day? Tuesday, what is the day today? The 12th, to act on behalf of the chairperson. So,
can I propose something? And I would like to propose that you see where we are going to sleep. I think where we are going to sleep. I
thank you very much. I won't repeat my statement. I'm happy that at least the department would be able to know who are they talking to just after you have introduced yourself. I'm already introduced as Chivase, the one from the Great Limpopo. I would like members of honorable members to introduce themselves to the department so that they must know, not indicating a person by the attire. Honorable Kuno, can you please introduce
yourself? Ntabise Mkhuno, Member of Parliament.
Lishiva Chiwela Elder, Member of Parliament.
Sizanele Ndinda, Member of Parliament. Rosalia Chiwela Ruto, a member of this committee.
My name is Nia Longo. I'm from Pumalanga, member of ANC, and I'm taking on the portfolio committee. Thank you.
Eric Kuchikala, member of the committee.
George Smother, member of parliament, and representing the Democratic Alliance.
I'm the Ministry.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I would like the leader of the delegation from the department to introduce themselves and his interview. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Veliswa Baduza. I am the Chief Operating Officer of the Department of Arts and Culture. From the 1st of October, I have requested to hold the fort while we're still looking for the DG. So I am then the acting DG until the post is filled. With me, I have got, I must say, members, I will improve it next time, but I'm accompanied by men. There's Pakamani Mtembu next to me on my left, who is our director responsible for living heritage.
who will be giving the presentation to the portfolio committee on our behalf. And next to him is Lodwick Ranidipi, who is in the office of the DG. He is responsible for parliamentary affairs. And on the extreme, in front of me on my extreme left, I have got Sipiwo Machoba, who is in the office of the minister, and he is a parliamentary officer. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you very much. I have with the staff members here from the department. Believing that maybe if there are media people around here, they have to be indicating that they are present with us here. Are there any people from the media?
Yes, there are.
Yeah. Which?
I'm Lethal Steenkamp. I'm from Bill's newspaper.
I'm Kavos Kosala from the Sunday Times.
Michelle Peterson, independent newspapers. Tolda Issa from De Burger.
Abdallah Driscoll from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
I'm Faith Kwaza from Parliamentary Communications Services.
Fakile Mukwena from Parliamentary Communications Service.
Thank you very much. We know at least what will be seen the following day. It will be reflecting the true explanation of what really came out. We are at least today we are discussing, we'll be listening to the information which we're looking for long, because without the proper name, wrong messages are really sent out by this naming of places, which sometimes are more insultive or insulting. I remember one year when we were debating the very same name, geographical names, a certain name was called in Free State, Sarkhat. You can imagine what type of Sarkhat is that one. It is really insulting. So when people really raise issues or name the places, whatever, at least they are giving some honor or respecting people, our previous people who did something in the country, but not such insulting words. So believing that the presenter from today will be knowing what is expected from us as South Africans. We have already received some apologies, which proves that maybe they can join us at a later stage. As long as the documents are there, they will be listening after. Or if they have some questions, they will be raised after. Unfortunately, our chairperson is not around. Thank you very much, honorable members and members from the media. And the rest. Over to you.
Thank you, chairperson. As I've indicated, Pakamani Mtembu will be presenting in the briefing to honorable members. Today we are asked to come and brief to you on the name changes as well as on the commemoration of the National Day. On Thursday, on the 14th, at 8:30 at Denny's, Minister Tungwana will be signing a delivery agreement for outcome 12B. Forming part of the outputs of those outcomes that are part of the delivery agreements that Minister will be signing on the 14th are these very two areas that we've been requested to come and brief you, honorable members, on. When we talk about geographical names, the objective is to transform South African heritage landscape through standardization of geographical names. We will present to you what we have done thus far as the department in terms of ensuring that the minister delivers on that mandate. Also forming part of the mandate of the minister in terms of a delivery agreement towards celebrating the South Africa's cultural diversity is the issue of commemoration of and celebration of national days. So these two areas that we'll be presenting to you, honorable members, are the center of the delivery agreement of the minister that she will be signing on Thursday. I hope that honorable members have been invited to come and witness the signing of the delivery agreement. Outcome 12 is shared between Minister Baloyi and Minister Tlongwane. 12A talks to public service, and 12B talks to the empowered. The department to have more women in arts and culture, because we're always seeing rugby team time and again. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and honorable members. Just before I commence with my presentation on names, just to mention that we have made available to yourselves a booklet. Looks like this. It's a booklet that summarizes the process that is followed in terms of naming, and summarizes the basic information in terms of the Act 118. And also we have distributed for your own reading a DVD. It takes you through the whole issue of naming, the reasoning behind it, the act, the process that needs to be followed when you want to apply for a name change or a correction of a spelling. It's also subtitled in all the official languages for ease of reference for all South Africans, so that it's not only accessible to those who can read and write in English. And I hope that you'll be able to share it with other members of the community. We'll try and print some more so that we could actually distribute more. We have, however, distributed about 2,500 per province to the Department of Arts and Culture in each province, and we have also distributed to municipalities. So we hope that the information is available to members of the public. My briefing will consist of about seven main areas. I'll start with an introduction, and I'll quickly then go to progress made in terms of the area of naming, standardization of names, and I'll just run through some statistics, which are also available on our DAC website. The DAC website has a link specifically dedicated to names. All the names that have been approved by the minister are immediately put on this website. We also have an application form in the website so that people can also download it. But unfortunately, I'm aware that this week, if you open it, the link won't open on the geographical names because it was hacked, and we had to close it down temporarily so that we can secure it. We have two documents. The one that you have is actually very detailed, more than this one. This one that I'm having is actually a summary of the document that you have, as the information is the same. Yes. And there are two. There's also one on commemorations as well. So so you might be seeing the other one that I've not yet gone to, but I've also go through that one, the second one on commemoration. We'll then talk about some statistics, and then I will go to challenges that we experience in the area of transformation of the heritage landscape. And then I'll talk about a few interventions that we've made. I'll then also talk about national hearings. We have done public hearings in provinces. And then we'll then talk about what we propose in terms of the way forward. Just as a way of introduction, I know that honorable members are familiar with the act, the legislation, in terms of the geographical names, Council Act 118 of 1998. Now, this is legislation that guides us in terms of transforming the heritage landscape through naming, renaming, and name standardization. It actually entails the fact that most of the naming that we have in South Africa does not reflect the demographics of South Africa. If you look at most of the names that we have, you know, of our streets, of our times, of our village, not many villages, but the urban areas does not reflect the demographics of the city of South Africa in terms of race, gender, and language. So the mandate of government is to transform this heritage landscape so that it reflects the people of South Africa in their totality. However, there is also another consideration that needs to be made, that whilst there is a need for this so-called decolonization of the heritage landscape, it should also happen within the spirit of building a cohesive nation instead of dividing the people of South Africa. Now, in order to accelerate this transformation, we established what we call Provincial Geographical Names Committee, because the Geographical Names Council is a national council. At provincial level, we've got what we call PGNC, Provincial Geographical Names Committees. As I said in my introduction, since the establishment of the council, has come up with regulations which are compiled in terms of the handbook that I've just shown you. We also have a computerized database. Some of the successes of the department in terms of the council is that in all 9 provinces, there are now provincial geographical names committees that assist in the area of standardization and transformation of geographical names. Now, these are some of the statistics that if you go to the database, you will see in terms of names that have been approved by the minister. You'll see I've just done them per language, starting from Afrikaans, English, isiNdebele, Xhosa, isiZulu, Sotho, Sepedi, Setswana, Swati, Tshivenda, Xitsonga. Where I say other languages, there are names that are neither English nor Afrikaans nor Zulu, but are a combination of languages. You'll find that there will be a name that is like Mahuba Sotloof, or that will combine English and Afrikaans, or combine even a language that is not official, Portuguese or German. So that's what we call other languages. I will just warn honorable members that maybe next week this statistic will have changed, because there's a name that the minister is grabbing the process of approving for 36. So next week this graph will have gone to 900 and something, but we update it every time the minister approves names. We also updated. We removed one name when Makati was reversed, so the number went down by one. If you look at these statistics by province, you'll see that the province that has got the biggest number of names that have been approved is Limpopo. The Geographical Names Committee is the most active in the country, and one of the reasons is that it was the first province to establish the Provincial Geographical Names Committee, so it is very active. Northern Cape has got probably the least in terms of the names that have been changed. The Eastern Cape has actually gone very high. It was actually one of the slowest provinces, but it has, the numbers has grown very high in terms of the names that have been approved. Just to mention that when I show this graph, the names that are approved when the minister receives them from the province. In other words, the minister does not proactively seek names. So where you see very few names, it's just because the minister is what she receives. The act precludes her from actively propagating her name. She waits for the names to be received and she becomes the final arbiter in terms of the names that need to be changed. This is just a breakdown of the names per language. It's very difficult to do this exercise, as I say, because language is very dynamic. It changes. It's very difficult to conclusively say that a name is in Ndebele instead of Isixhosa, because some languages share names. But what we use the application form. You'll see at the back of this booklet, there's a specimen of an application form. The applicant is requested in terms of the application form to give us the origin of the name. In other words, they must do a little bit of research to say, this is the name that we are proposing. This is the reason why we are proposing it. Sometimes they'll say, because the spelling was incorrect, we are correcting the spelling. That's why we get the information. But if we don't get the information from the applicant, in the council, we have got linguists as well. The Pan South African Language Board is an official member of the council. So they send the names to their researchers to verify the correctness of the language. So we use that information to know the linguistic origin of a name. Now, if I can just go to challenges that we experience in terms of the name. The first bullet says conflict and contestation. Conflict and contestation comes not only from people who object to name changes, because wherever there is a name that is proposed, there will be some communities that will object. It will object for political reasons, it will object for cultural reasons. Some people might even object because they feel that there's a distortion of history. Or they might just not like the personality after which the new name is named. If you remember that in our history, people fought over land and they were victors and there were those who were conquered. So if you come from a community of those who were conquered by the person after which the place is named, you'll obviously object. So there's always that contestation in terms of names. There are communities that feel that their heritage is being marginalized. You will know most of the names that have been changed. There are communities that have gone to the minister, pressure groups like AfriForum who have gone to the minister and say that they feel that the language and culture of the African people is being eroded through this process, and that is not contributing towards reconciliation. So there is that perception that this is perhaps what people call the reverse discrimination. So it's a very difficult area to work in. There are also court cases. In most instances, the department is taken to court over the decisions of the minister. You'll remember the Makado example. You'll remember the Tswane example. Still, court cases ongoing, even at the moment, on these areas. There are letters that the minister receives from Bombela communities that are concerned about the change from Nelspruit. So it's an area where it's constantly disputes and court cases. And then there is an argument that honorable members will be very familiar with, that says that don't use the money on heritage and name, build RGB houses with that money. It's an argument that has always been made that no, people are hungry, why do you waste money on names? Why don't you build RGB houses? And I've mentioned the issue of nation building, that there's a perception that we are working against nation building. Now, the other challenges that come from within is the fact that, government, the Department of Arts and Culture in particular, battling in terms of resources, would like to increase the capacity within and at provinces to support the process of name changing. But due to financial constraints, we're not doing as much as we should do in terms of moving into the communities and explaining the processes to them at local levels instead of provincial and district levels. And also the Act, which I think the honorable members would be able to assist us, it does not specify what constitutes sufficient consultation. In the case of Makado, the name was thrown back because the judges felt that the local and district municipalities did not consult sufficiently in the wisdom of the judges. But the Act is not clear how much should you consult, and the method of consultation. Because normally the process that is followed is that the council, the members of council at a metro or at a district will sit, and then a member of council will propose a name change, and they will vote. And the majority of the council members will then adopt that as a resolution of council. And then the municipal manager will then fill in the form on behalf of that district municipality, stamp it, and then take it to the provincial geographical name council. And then they'll call a meeting in a hall, they'll advertise the meeting, and then some people won't attend. And then if the minister approves that name, then they will say, but we didn't attend that meeting. So there is that area where we probably need to ask the honorable members of parliament to look at the legislation in this regard, in terms of whether it can be tightened up, either through regulation, because it's not everything can be put in an act, but maybe the regulations can actually tighten up on that area. Just to say that this legislation is part of the bunch of acts of the Department of Arts and Culture that are up for review, so I'm sure that this matter will be looked at going forward. Now, we have done some interventions, including giving money to the provinces to try and capacitate them. We have established the provincial geographical names committees. We assist the provinces in terms of capacitating them, training them, in terms of knowing how to handle geographical names in terms of the existing act. We have done workshops, we have done campaigns which we call the Mabizo campaigns. We have even just concluded provincial geographical names hearings in all the 9 provinces. The last was the Northern Cape in Kimberley, where we did our last hearing. We think we have been successful in the public hearings, but we think the capacity should reside at provincial level instead of national level, because that's where the names come from. The minister approves names which come from provinces. Most members are aware that we started this process in 2008 of going around provinces and making people aware of what the process should be in terms of applying for geographical names. And as I've said, we've done all provinces in terms of public hearing. and we are encouraging municipalities. In all these public hearings, the minister wrote to all districts and local municipalities to attend public hearings, and we also gave them these videos, as I've said before, where we are making aware of the process that they need to follow. Now, I talked about the issue of the consultation. The consultation that we follow is in terms of the Promotion of Administration Justice Administration Act of 2000, where it prescribes that any decision that government takes, it should inform the people of that decision. People should have an opportunity of being informed of a decision that government takes. We, as I said, have done the workshops, we've completed the provincial geographical name hearing. And we would like to conclude this by having a national consultative workshop, or call it a conference, where we will then share with the public all the suggestions and the comments that come from provinces in terms of how we should take the issue of names going forward. We are still going to present our report to Cabinet and then Parliament. And then that report will then be shared by the members of the public in terms of reaching consensus in terms of how we should handle the sensitive area of name standardization. And I selectively use the word name standardization because it's not correct to say the process is about name changes. There are places that don't have names. If you build a new townhouse complexes, you need to give it a name. You don't need to change anything. You give it a new name. If you build a post office, you give it a name. You're not changing a name. And sometimes if a name is incorrectly spelled, or a school or an airport, you correct the name. You don't change the name necessarily. In this list of close to 900 names, less than a quarter are name changes. Most of them are new names. Our biggest customer is the post office. Everywhere they build a new post office, they must give it a new name. The new developments in terms of townhouse complexes, they need to have a name. And I didn't really go through in terms of analyzing the names themselves, but if you check the names, if you go through our list, you'll find that the names, the trend is that the language that is actually gaining more in terms of names is English instead of the indigenous languages. So it's just a perception that the African languages are the reverse. Because there are very few townhouse complexes that will be called Mtembu View or Mtembu Complex. They will all be called Sea View. They've got very nice English names. So the latest development in terms of both estates, you'll find English names that are gaining in terms of the number. So maybe the members would like to just do an analysis of names when they find time to just check the website in terms of the trend. But it's a very balanced trend. You'll find that as well, there was also a perception that the Afrikaans names are being eroded. They do actually gain a lot. Even in the names of the townships, there will be Mahuba Sloof, there will be Deep Sloot. In African language communities where there is no much African speaking in that area. So the name environment does balance itself because it comes from the ground in most instances. And in most instances, the companies that develop new complexes are the ones that come with the name. And if the name is not duplicated anywhere, the minister will almost always approve the name. Unless then it's offensive in terms of race, gender, ethnicity. Or it is written in such a way that it's confusing and it reflects somewhere in the map, in the same vicinity, that in terms of mapping, it might not be a good name to name, but in most instances, the minister does approve the names that are suggested if there is no objection in terms of those categories that I've just mentioned. Thank you very much. I think, let me stop there. I'm sorry for this slide, that it's not very clear, but I think we'll print it out for honorable members, and I think it will be clearer there.
Thank you very much. I've forgotten your title from the department. Deputy Director. I think it's an eye-opener to us, most of us, really. Like you indicated, a lot of things. I'll give members time for questions, and meanwhile, I'll be listening to the second presentation so that members will be jotting down whatever they will be asking. I heard that there'll be some presentation from the other. Over to you. Over to you.
Is it possible that we can get this presentation, because we don't have the presentation? You know, everything that you said, the introduction, everything is so good, but we don't have it.
I also wanted to remind you, at least to give you the what you are really giving us now. Well, this one doesn't have. Second presentation.
Second one is about commemoration. National commemorations or national days. As honorable members will know, we have national commemorations starting from Human Rights Day. We have your June 16, Women's Day, Heritage Day, Day of Reconciliation. Well, we also have got, I skipped 27th of April, where we celebrate the freedom of South Africa. But those are not only the national days that we have. I mean, those are national holidays. Because a national day can also happen without that being a holiday. There are also days that we commemorate different events, which are national days. For example, we are going to commemorate the 150th arrival of indentured Indian laborers in South Africa soon. It's going to be a national day, as the President has declared during State of the Nation address. Now, the issue here in terms of government is that these days, if you are aware, they are managed from different areas of government. June 16 has been historically managed from the Office of the President. If you remember that the Office of the Status of Women and Children has been central in the President's office under previous Minister Pahat's office. June 16 has also been managed from that office. We in arts and culture have been mainly responsible for Heritage Day, Freedom Day, and to some extent, National Day of Reconciliation. That in itself means that there are problems, because there are no standards in terms of government. Although government is one government, but in terms of emphasis, it comes from different areas of government. And that has actually been problematic in terms of focusing government. The problem has been that it has been obvious that since the first democratic elections. We have not been able to unite South Africans in terms of race and gender and cultural persuasion. Honorable members would be aware that in most national days, the complexion of the people who are attending is almost the same. People from the white community, mainly the Indian community, are very few at the stadium. And it has been a constant complaint of the president and all of government that why is it that even if we provide buses and everything to all the urban areas, they come back empty. The stadium is full, but it's full of the people from the same area. If you see most of the events that we organize as a Department of Arts and Culture. Now, I'm giving this as a background because what has then happened is that the presidency has then asked that Arts and Culture become the lead department in terms of organizing National Day, so that we can then look at this problem, this challenge that we are facing. Why is it that not all South Africans go to a stadium during Heritage Day? Why is it that they decide to go and pray when there's Heritage Day? And then they call it Pride Day. Like they're saying, no, look, this is not very important for us. But why is it that in other countries people do go and celebrate together? It's questions that we have not been able to answer as South Africans. We know that we come from a past where people have not been taught to socialize together. They work together and then they go separate ways because it has been inculcated in our psyche that you go to your township, the other one goes to their own township. So the adult population, it's very difficult for us to mobilize people in all communities. It is very easy for us to mobilize schools because the younger generation are used to mixing across race and color. But it's very difficult for us. So one of the things that we are now doing as the Department of Arts and Culture, we have written to Cabinet to suggest new ways and means of changing the situation. We, as the members would know, honorable members, that we started in Sharpeville by the minister saying that she will come to parliament and talk to leaders of all political parties as an instruction from cabinet to say that in all national days, as a matter of principle, all political parties leaders will speak. We started in Sharpeville, Heritage Day in Limpopo, I think this Heritage Day in Durban. Leaders of all political parties are in the program. It's now not the president. And that was just the start to say if that is not going to then send a message to all South Africans that national days are not a preserve of a political party, but I preserve for all South Africans. So if all the leaders of political parties in parliament, in the National Assembly, go and speak at a national event, then everyone will see that there is a change in focus in terms of how government is handling national days. I'm glad to say that from what I've seen in almost all the national days, leaders do speak. They do render messages of support to the public. Now, as I've said, that look, the commemorations, it's something that we must admit, have not been able to bring South Africans together in the ways that we would like to. If you do a small event or a dinner, you do get people from all races, but if you take Heritage Day to Skukuni, to Moroke village, you will not get people from all the races, but you will get locals. So it's still that challenge. Also, it's the issue of the veil. If you take the event to an urban center, chances of you getting people from all races is bigger. So I do not know whether it's a perception or about townships or that people are still a bit nervous about visiting them. For a strange reason, if you take a sport to a township, people do go and attend, with, as you have seen with the rugby. Now, I've gone through this area of saying that for the last 16 years we have been battling to get people of all races to attend our events. Now, we have done research, we have done studies to check the trends of people in South Africa in terms of their interests, and we have even tried in terms of music mix in our national event to make sure that there are performers from all race groups, which we were hoping that it's going to then assist us as South Africans to bring South Africans from all race groups to attend our events. We have been suggesting, one of the things that we are suggesting to cabinet is that maybe we should move away from the rally type of events in all events, because maybe we are doing things incorrectly by making them all the same. Freedom Day and Heritage Day should not be the same. Youth Day and Human Rights Day should not be the same. And Mandela Day, the format is usually the same. There's a rally and then there are political speeches. And it might help to move towards a more education-oriented commemoration. And maybe to localize commemoration so that people can commemorate wherever they are in terms of their small groups instead of having one huge rally in a stadium. We have also been talking to our institutions, like our museums. We've got a lot of institutions that we run as a government, and we have not been using them, so that when it's Heritage Day, each place, each museum in each place can host an event. They can say that people should come dressed in their traditional attire. They do indigenous games, they do indigenous food. In places where people are comfortable, instead of moving them maybe all to one place. If people like to cry, as we now have this competition during Heritage Day, Pride Day, maybe we should say, you know, people should continue to pray, but not call it Pride Day, call it Heritage Day. Pride is still part of our heritage, part of our food or culinary heritage. It should not only be the pray, it should also be Masonja, it should be Morocco, it should be all the indigenous food in that area where people are comfortable, and instead of maybe moving them all to a stadium. If people would like to go to a place where they pray, they should celebrate it as part of our heritage, as long as they don't just change the name to Pride Day, because it then denigrates the nature of a national day. It's not something that we should encourage, that people will rename a national day, because if that happens, then they will also rename Freedom Day and call it something else. And it's not helping us in terms of patriotism. But I think what I'm actually getting at is that maybe move some national days to localize them so that people can feel comfortable if they don't have to all go to a stadium. But maybe there are days that need a stadium, like your Freedom Day, where we celebrate together as South Africans. So the 1-2-fits-all method that we have been using as government is problematic, one. The second one is the fact that 5 government departments have been doing National Day. They're still doing National Days as we speak, because the new proposal that we are making to cabinet has not been approved yet. So the presentation we are making is about what we are proposing. We have written to cabinet about and have not yet received a response. Now, I've said that the museums, the galleries, the archives, and the libraries have not been used optimally by ourselves, as we have been usually using a stadium and a hall. And these institutions have not been used to decentralize the way we do our national days. And there is the issue of depolitization of commemorations and celebrations. It's one of the comments that we got. I do not know whether that is possible. Maybe what is possible is to make it open to all political persuasions, because obviously during the National Day you still need someone to speak. What we have done is that to make sure that all political parties get the platform to speak, so that it becomes a South African event in terms of Heritage Day. And we have been also been trying to have a theme for all national days, focusing on, as I say, what unites us instead of what divides us. For example, during the Heritage Day 2010, the President thanked South Africans for uniting in hosting a successful 2010 World Cup. And he did make a comment that it was the first time that we have succeeded in bringing people of all races to stadiums and townships. Now, the problem is whether after the rugby we will be able to do that without a sport, because we need to find a way of maintaining this without a rugby game, or without a Bafana Bafana game. There has also been a suggestion that we should partner with the Department of Education and Higher Education. It's easier to deal with young people who have got no prejudices, to start there in terms of making them understand the issue of nation building and national unity. I think we will all not lose focus of the people of the older generation. It's not a lost cause, but there is a focus on young people, so that as they grow up, they are people who are used to socializing across cultural or linguistic groups. We also would like to, as I said, use our institutions, our museums, our theaters, our playhouses, where people can meet in smaller groups and commemorate national days. And we'll also, if a cabinet approves, there will be, I think, a national consultative forum that will deal specifically on social cohesion. And that will also assist us to find out what it is that we're probably not doing correctly, that maybe what we should do to make South Africans mixed more often outside sport, especially during National Days. We are also at the moment doing recordings of stories of South Africans in terms of their culture, their religion. It's part of the work that is being done within Living Heritage, so that South Africans can know more about each other. Because part of the reason why people are not comfortable with socializing with each other is because There is lack of knowledge about each other's culture, each other's language, each other's heritage. You will know that more people from Europe will know about the dances of various cultural groups of South Africa than South Africans themselves. There will be very few people who come from the north who would know about those trends and vice versa. But you will find a tourist who knows a little bit more than ourselves. So we have not visited each other as a country. So maybe we need to do more in terms of educating each other, just as South Africans, so that we can feel comfortable with each other. I think the legacy of where we come from that makes it very difficult for us to do this. So I've actually talked about our institutions and how our institutions should actually assist us in us socializing across color and race lines. Another matter that I have not mentioned is the language barrier. It is very difficult to socialize with a person if you have to socialize only in English. People usually regard English as a language of work, and when they go home, they speak their mother tongue. But the disadvantage that we have as South Africans is that most of our compatriots speak one or two languages. And it's where then we stress that it's important for young people to be part of this renaissance, because they study together, they speak the languages that are common. And it may be one of the barriers that we have not been aware of, that although people would like to socialize with each other, sometimes they just cannot speak the language of the area where we say that they should be. Now, the issue of political parties being represented in parliament, participating in national days, I've mentioned, and I've also said that it's actually very, very successful. So at that area, we've been successful, but in terms of the followers of the leaders that speak during national events, we've been less successful. What we've also done, which is new, in terms of national day commemorations, in order to lessen the perception that it's a rally, we have said that when people go Heritage Day, to Women's Day, they must gain something when they get there, when they come from there. One of the things that they gain now is that we all the social development cluster departments, it's a must that they go there. People must be able to apply for an ID when they go for a national day. They must be able to apply for a social grant. They must be able to register as a voter. They must be able to check for HIV and AIDS whilst they are there at the stadium. So that's one of the things that has been very successful in terms of rendering social services during National Day, so that people can look forward to going to a National Day to say, okay, even if I don't enjoy the music, I'll be able to check my HIV status. I'll be able to apply for a social grant. I'll be able to check my name on the voter's roll. So that's one of the things that we have done so far. So, honourable members, just to summarise, I will say that we have made a proposal to Cabinet in terms of the new ways of handling National Day. One of them being that they should be centralised in terms of leadership, in terms of one department, so that we can then have a focus on each one of them, so that they're not the same, you know, the same issue in all national days. We've also implemented some of the things that we've suggested, although they have not been approved. The issue of service delivery during national days. We were hoping that Cabinet is not going to disapprove of that, so we've already implemented that. The one of all political parties participating has been implemented, because it has been from President's office as an instruction. Let me just stop there and say that once that approval has been given in terms of the new ways of handling commemoration, the Director General or the Minister will come back to honorable members and give you concrete information in terms of what has been approved. What we have been giving you are recommendations that we are making, which we hope most will be approved. Thank you.
Thank you very much for both presentations, which did really serve as an eye-opener. There were certain of a lot of things really which people were taking for granted, not knowing how important these celebrations, this heritage, instead of uniting, somehow people have been separating themselves. Some will be saying, we are this, but forgetting that we're all South Africans. We all have our own histories, but when coming to celebrations as South Africans, we have to celebrate together, more especially these main ones. Because otherwise, if we can entertain the bush entertainments, the bride, the whatever, sometimes they can destroy even the nature. When certain things happen in the bushes, they don't even account for such. But the very same presentation, like I said, it is an eye-opener. Now, for today, we will enjoy whatever celebration will be coming. The names, as I have already indicated, that discussions, consultations, and whatever helped a lot, or still helps, because if people can do certain things without agreeing, you will fight an endless fight. So I believe, like I indicated from the beginning, that honorable members should be jotting down crucial questions. Clarity will be needed from the presenters that clarify whatever they'll be raising. Over to honorable members. Raise all questions from both presentations. We won't be able to listen to one presentation, but it will depend on the questions from the honorable members. Over to honorable members. Lothred. And then the other one?
Smaller.
Spanner.
Smaller. S-M-A-L-L-E.
S-M-A?
Double L-E.
Double L-E. Spalle.
Yeah, small, smaller, something.
Small, Spalle, eh?
Yeah.
Or smaller. No,
no,
it's best. Spalle is okay. And then the other one? Kuno. Another one. Sikela. Oh, yes, at least. Sikela. Chi. Right. And then the other one, the fifth one. Mina, let's be attending to the first. Ludwig, what's your question?
Thank you, Chair. Do I understand you correctly? We have to now ask questions on both presentations.
Yes.
Okay, then in terms of the second presentation, I would just like to say to the department that I think that it is very important, this new approach that they are in fact taking in terms of commemoration of National Days. I think it's very important, and I appreciate the fact that they have in fact asked questions and looked at reasons why not all people were attending these commemorations. So I hope that they will have success in the recommendations that they are making, because I do think that diversifying and localizing these types of days would perhaps have more success. But getting back to the first presentation on the geographical names, Chair, I would just say, well, first of all, I think the principle of standardization of names, including the changes of the names, is an important principle that's very necessary. I would, however, want to ask, just in terms of interest, and then I'm going to have another question based on this also, If one looks at, is it possible to go to the slides, please? I didn't do it. Slide 1.2. Now, if you have the 1.2, it says that in terms of the Act, it entails decolonizing the heritage landscape by replacing colonial names. Now, how do you reconcile that with what is given in page 6 in the handbook? Under the heading, can existing names be changed? Geographical names are part of the historical, cultural, and linguistic heritage of the nation, which it is more desirable to preserve than destroy. So I just want to ask, how do you balance that, on the one hand saying that all colonial names have to be replaced, and this preserving vis-a-vis destroying? Because one has to realize that history is a timeline. It is not. It doesn't happen all of a sudden. And one's name should reflect a history, and even perhaps a very unhappy history, because we've had a long unhappy history in any case in this country. So that on the one hand. And then my other problem that I do have, and I'm going to direct this also to the acting DG, because this is a very serious matter. And it relates to the whole question of legislation, regulations, and the due processes followed when these hearings are held and when proposals are made. Because it has been brought to my attention that in the Free State, where they've now had hearings, the proposals of the names to be changed are in fact the committee members of the Provincial Geographical Names Committee. Now, that in itself is clearly a conflict of interest. One cannot propose and then decide on whether. So I'm bringing it to your attention here that it is extremely important. If one wants to get the buy-in of all people, these processes have to be open, transparent, and they should be free of any conflicts of interest. So I would ask you, and I'll also contact you later on with more details about that. So I think it's also very important then that serious attention be paid to regulations in terms of the scope, the nature, and the method of these hearings. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Lutwit. Honourable Smola.
Thank you, Chair. Not to repeat, I think sufficient consultation actually means, in my understanding, it's when you actually exhaust all other venues. And it's important, and I agree, that better regulations concerning the outlines of how these processes must be followed, that proper regulations has got to be put in line. If we are looking in a coercive arrangement by all citizens that are being affected in these respective areas, that are to do with name changes. Putting all the different names under all the heritage days or all the national holidays under one department probably stipulates a better functioning, well-streamed, more fluent organization. And I agree that you would probably get the outcome that you might be wanting to look at. I also want to bring up a case where, going back to name changes, when situations are being referred back for a process that was not followed correctly by means of if the court has so ruled that the process wasn't followed correctly, and the process has got to be redone, is it is it then correctly to say that the same persons that sat or was responsible for those for the situation to happen, to then be part of that whole process again, or should one then have got to relook at how the committees or the situation actually followed? Just to get my understanding on that, how the department actually sees that process being so that it reflects probably a partial decision or a decision that is actually then in line on what the department actually wants to get done at the end of the day.
Thank you. Honorable Kunal.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank to the presenters. I'm hoping that before we leave, we'd have the presentation that he had earlier on. Like I said, it was, it was very important, especially the introduction. It was very rich. Chairperson, I couldn't agree with you more that some of the names that we have, the colonial names, they are really offensive and all that. And I agree with the statement that, as much as we want to bring history together, not forgetting what has happened, but again, it's very important that our African culture is also preserved. We cannot ignore what has happened in the past, and because of what has happened in the past, we ignore and we say, let us go forward without us having to say we are proud of ourselves as being Africans, as being part of this country. And I agree that we'll be waiting for the legislation to come back to the committee and look into the processes. What is it that we can do for regulations and all that? The processes that you talked about, for name change or proposing names and all that, is it only done in the municipality level? Does it start there and then goes to provincial offices and all that? And, the other question I wanted to ask was that the 200,000 that you say you give to provinces for these name changes, is it the same amount in all provinces? If it's the same, I was just asking myself, why is Limpopo so active than any other province? And I think we need to do more of that, because this helps us to understand and accept ourselves, as South Africans. The other thing, I wanted to know, how do you, as a department, promote our indigenous language? When you think about all the heritage days that we have, I went to a conference, Ubuntu, and people were talking about, religion comparing to the African way of doing things, that September is this rich month of Africans, this is where rain starts and all that. If we could get more of those knowledge, that history, and try to see how can we bring it, as part of our, information to our own people, this will be helping us to transform. I mean, we are 15 years in the new democracy, but there's still lots of other things that we still have to transform, and the progress is really slow. On the second presentation, I think what you are saying, I agree with Ms. Lodret, that when we do those, getting out of the big rallies, because it takes lot to plan for those events and all that, and if you localize them, I agree with her that it will be really better. And one thing, it will also promote local leaders. But you ask yourself, how is that going to be managed? Because at times I think the planning should be done, a lot more in advance, than planning for this month for something that is going to happen next month. We know all these heritage days that we have to
celebrate. I think when we have that in January already, this should be, you know, taken to all the provinces and let us see how we do things. You know, this thing of doing things at the last minute is a problem. But the other thing, you know, bringing those cultures together, it's like in the all the heritage, like Robo Anglo Boho in Bloemfontein, the museum for people. My design country, it's in Exeter, but war museums and all that. You know, there is no transformation. People are saying this is my territory, and I'm not going to allow anybody to come into my territory and all that. And I'm saying, as much as we, you know, looking into when we have events that we have only a particular sector attending, other people not attending. I think when we do that, when we have come with a solution, we identify the problem, we're coming with a solution. I think we need to go back to all those heritage sites that we have and say, you know, transform those things. If somebody has been there for 15 years and they are not doing anything, why don't we change them around? And, you know, it should not be a white thing because we are in South Africa. It should be both black and white. So I'm just saying that as much as we're looking into this, it has to be concurrent. Thank you, Chairperson. Oh, and I think that, you know, with soccer matches, one of the things, the vehicle that helped and make sure that people actually went to also went to and attended rugby. I think the adverts, you know, the TV adverts, they really helped. So if we could get things like that, use our own local stations, use our parliamentary constituency offices, because I think it's the other vehicle to make sure that people know about an event and they go and attend whatever is happening in any other place. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Chikela.
That's
pronounce it well.
That's better.
Thank you very much.
on the question of name change, mine is to say that, you know, it is very, very important for all South Africans to know that ukukwekwediswa kwamagama athukayo namagama angamkelekanga kwi-society amele uba loo nto iqhutyekwe nayo yenzeke rather ngokukhawuleza. Because, you know, what I've actually observed is that the process of name change, it is very much prolonged. For what purpose, I do not know. That process should be, you know, shortened. I think we all understand, especially myself coming from the background of a squatter camp resident. You would actually remember that, you know, some of the areas there are being named by the people themselves, whether legally or not, residing in those areas. But after having been relocated or, you know, allocated to some sites or a newly established junction, you know, all those names are actually being washed away and they are not even considered. And those are the names that people really suggest that they should be considered. And therefore, it comes back to the question of what really informs the final decision at some stage of the final name that comes up. Because it is quite true that, you know, the consultation, yes, I agree that it is actually not sufficient, but I think it is very, very easy. You know, you consult the communities, people out there, and these question of like not knowing, you know, what how to measure sufficient consultation. I think it comes back to the question of like the act has to be very clear on that, and so that you're not caught up by the courts and have the country run by courts, you know, and and the act is silent on that. It has to be clear, and I think the portfolio committee has a role to play in that. On the other hand, the style in which national days are conducted, I think I would agree that, you know, this rally thing, to me, it's very good. Because on these days, we're showing ourselves, our country, the world, that we can be together and speak with one voice. And that's what it would, in a way, also mean, you know, for the day. But I must also say that, you know, with this bright thing that is happening, you know, some of the people that are not attending to these heritage days, remember, partly it's ignorance for the day. It's complete ignorance by other people who do not recognize, you know, the togetherness. Or even people like from informal segment, for instance, that they feel that, you know, they are not part of this kind of thing. Therefore, on the, you know, question of like having drawn in, managed to draw in, you know, the political individual or different political leaders, it's a good and bold step. But it's not enough, because you see the same people, you know, in this garden. And I don't know whether it would really reflect negatively that while encouraging the leadership across political spectrum to attend and speak, but that must be accompanied with the enough members from all political parties. Not that we should be looking at our leader at the TV and so on, as it happens really now. It should be taken to a further step that people must go there. Not really brying there, you know, it doesn't serve the purpose. That is the question. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Let's try to shorten the questions. If we know that someone has already covered that aspect, I know that where is history making. It's only us in culture that can do that to change this, the history of this country, that people should know the truth, not the around the corner statements saying that this and this and this. I'm not talking about members of the portfolio committee. I mean, we have to, our grandchildren, great-grandchildren will say it's us in culture who did it. They brought the things together, and we respect one another. The other question which one wanted to know is that, like you indicated from the beginning, that as far as nationalities are concerned, we have the Khoisans who are the residents of this country. They make history. Seem as if somehow they're being ignored. I'm having that worry, really, that it seems that they never lived. If they can raise their questions, really, they have to be attended to. Otherwise, we'll be turning there to be people who don't ignore the department, who doesn't care about the citizens of the former. The time we had that, the word, I don't know whether I'm true or not, which says native means the citizen, kefa means the citizen, kwere kwere means the citizen. You can imagine those names, really, how they were so insultive to our people. I think you have to be serious with that issue, because they kept on coming, asking why are we not attended to. They also have their kings and the chiefs, but they are somehow ignored. One would say, I'm just sending a message to you as a department, that take care of them. Like I say, it's history making. One day our grandchildren will say, you have done it. You have united the country.
we love one another because of arts and culture. Honorable Mamurudo.
Thanks.
I hope, Chairperson, I'm going to be brief as you have warned us. But I also thank the department for this elaborate presentation they've given us. It only shows how the department is serious, really, about transforming the arts and culture department. And it can only be done by women, of course, because the women. Yes. Yeah. I think, first of all, it's good that you gave us this document, because I was going to reflect on the 15 years and the 16 years. It might be a typing error. Now that I saw it, that you gave us this other document. But I want to elaborate on what Honorable Kuno spoke about. You know, I grew up in Staterheim, where, you know where Staterheim is, some of you, Ekumagas. And we were Amakoboga and Amakaba. But I think that the indigenous people had a belief also that there is a God, Ukamad. Not because of the religion that we got from school, and although they were, some of them were not educated. I don't know, I just want to make a proposal that as the department, maybe we tap into such areas, the indigenous beliefs. I don't know whether I should call them the religion again, but they had a way of doing things. And we've just lost it. You know, there are those books that we read as literature at school, Kalala Mawele and all this. You could see that even justice was there. So the life was going on then. Yeah, I think we should step on that. And I think it happened across our country. On page 12, there is where it says, You utilize media to inform the public. I would say that what kind of media? Maybe, you know, in areas when we deal about diversity, and also deal about universal access, and where we can reach the people. You know, those people who are living in areas where they don't have TVs and everything. Maybe the form of media you should be using, it should also be radios. That's why I wanted to know what kind of media you have been using, so that when you are popularizing the geographical names, change, so that we achieve the social cohesion and nation building. I'm happy about what you said about the format of the commemoration should also not be the same. But I wonder whether we are not dividing. I also have a concern on that. How are we going to do this if we are going to be doing it, if it's not a rally? And if we have to make a commemorations, for instance, if I go to the same Tumagala I was thinking about, now they've got townships as Lalin in Kubusi and all that, I would do it a different way from a person who stays in Cape Town. Maybe, but if you have a rally, maybe that everyone would attend. I think I would agree with the previous speaker. It shows that as South Africans, we are united. I don't know if we do it the other way, won't it be now dividing us more? I'm just concerned about it. It is good maybe to come up with new things, but we must also be careful that they are not going to be bringing up what we are trying to transform. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. The presenter is a turnout to respond to the questions. I don't know whether you can be able, you have already identified who is this person who raised what. Oh, it's okay. Like you. Over to you.
Thank you, honorable chairperson. You made it easier for us when the members introduced themselves in the beginning, and even when they were going to field questions, you requested that they introduce themselves. I will request my colleague to talk on the first question by Honorable Lotrit around what seemed to be the contradiction between 1.2 and page 6 of the booklet. But I think before I do that, for me, on the overall, especially with relations to the issues of commemorations and celebrations, we need to ask ourselves a bigger question. What is it that binds us as South Africans together? Perhaps that's what we still need to talk about. We will be, as the department, going through some consultations with communities, mobilizing communities, and discussing the issue of social cohesion. And one of the questions that will be key to those discussions is, what is it that binds South Africans together? And also perhaps another question is, what role does culture then play in bringing us together? Especially in the context of our constitution, where it is clearly indicated in the preamble that South Africa belongs to all who live in it, united in diversity. So for me, then, we have to acknowledge the fact that we are diversified, but also we are united. So how do we then bring those two together? Minister has accompanied the Deputy President in the trip to Vietnam, and she called to marvel at how the Vietnamese, with the 54 tribes that they have, each of those 54 tribes have got their status is recognized, how they put funds into promoting their culture and the different cultures. So it's done. It's doable. It's just that as South Africans, we need to find a way of how we're going to do it. And also, I think with the assistance of you, the chairperson, and honorable members, promote culture and pledge for funds to be injected into the Department of Culture so that we can use culture to bring South Africans together. But having said that, Honorable Lotrit, I had asked my colleague here to find out whether if you are then appointed as a member of a provincial GNC, does that take away your right as an individual to propose name? As you say, does it then not pose a conflict of interest, or do you then relinquish your right as a citizen to recommend name? So I think he will talk to that, but I take your point, and I'm looking forward to receiving those details. And then with regards to the Honorable Smaller on the issue of should the same person reconvene a consultation process that was ruled inconclusive by the Court of Law, I will also ask my colleague here to pronounce on that one. But I'll ask him to respond, and then if I see there are questions that have been left out, then I'll come in. I propose that format, Chairperson. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you. The tension between the issue of transforming the heritage landscape and at the same time preserving the diversity in terms of culture. It's part of the problem that I've said in the beginning that we are grappling with every day at the department. Because at the same time, the Act, one of its main aims is the transformation element. But obviously, government has to balance that with not polarizing society at the same time. So it's something that we admit that exists. So we have that inevitable task of doing both at the same time. You know, you transform a name in a community, and you also have to convince the community that it's in the greater good of everyone. But it is a tension that we hope that honorable members as politicians can assist us to navigate. Look, as officials, we do things in terms of the Act, the lantern, the spirit of the law in terms of transformation. But as I said to you, Honorable Lord, in the beginning, that there have been delegations to the minister from consent groups that have said exactly the same, that the history that is being transformed is still the history of South Africa, and it should not be tampered with. However, the names that come to us, fortunately or unfortunately, we don't have a say on that. All we interact with is the application form once it's on our table. And we follow the process in terms of sifting out, in terms of whether it's correct, in terms of race, gender, in terms of where it's written, in terms of whether it's not a duplication. But yes, I think the debate that you're talking about is a matter that maybe should be debated at your level. As politicians, because as officials, I think I'm probably not the best person to deliberate on that. The name that also where people are referees and players at the same time, no, they should not. You cannot apply for the name change in a form and then sit in the committee that adjudicates it. If that has happened, please let the acting DG know. What I know is that every South African has got the right to make a suggestion in terms of name change. But when you have exercised that right, you may then recuse yourself when a decision is being taken on that name. It's just a common law practice that you cannot propose a name and then decide on the approval of that name yourself. I think you must declare and say, look, I was part of the decision to make an application, and therefore I would like to recuse myself and not participate at the provincial decision-making process. So I think please make us aware of that through our writing DG. And Kwenji, what was the next one?
I think Honorable Sumano was asking, should the same person reconvene the consultation process?
Oh, okay. Well, let me be specific. In terms of the case referred, Louis Trichardt, Makado, and back to Louis Trichardt, the judges that appeal court, first the High Court in Pretoria held that the process was correct, the High Court in Pretoria. And then the aggrieved appealed to the High Court, to the Supreme Court of Appeals in Bloemfontein, and then the decision was reversed. On the basis that there are communities where it is clear that they are not consulted properly. The date of the meeting was brought forward by one day, so that if the consultation was going to be on Sunday, it was then moved to Saturday. And then the applicants used that as proof that it might have been done so that they will not be there, and the judges were convened. However, the decision was that the process be reversed and redone. So in other words, the people who did the mistake were supposed to correct the mistakes themselves. And I think the judges knew that those people were the municipality. So there is no other legitimate structure in Makati who could have redone the process. Remember that the council is not supposed to do that themselves. They're supposed to adjudicate. So the answer is yes. The person who does consultation can repeat the consultation and correct the consultation. But it's a different matter when you're talking about the matter of the consent. Now, people can recuse themselves at the recommendation of an applicant. They can, if there is a feeling that they are not going to be fair to the process of adjudicating a name, applicants can, or objectors can ask any individual to recuse themselves, but they must give a good reason. They cannot say that we think that you are going to rule in favor of so and so. That it must be shown that the person is so prejudiced that they are not going to give a good decision.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Kuno's questions, a number of them. The first one was, where does the process of name change start? I think that's what you were asking. And whether provinces are subsidized equally, why then is Limpopo so active? And how do we promote African languages? I think those are the questions. And also the issue of transformation of the heritage institutions that you were calling us to transform heritage institutions, and also plan in advance for these celebrations and events so that we don't plan a month before. And then also that we should promote events extensively through the media. I think I'll talk about the planning in advance, and I would like to just say that we accept that, we take note of that advice. But also, there's quite a number of, I just want to bring to the attention of members that there are other processes that are beyond our administrative, control, in the sense that you would need some direction from the presidency, for instance, in terms of where the event is going to be held. You would need some direction in terms of the theme. We will do the administrative processes, because then it has to go to cabinet or it has to go to the president. And sometimes we get some delays in terms of getting those directions in terms of which way to go. But be that as it may, that's not an excuse. We take note of that advice. And as you say, we know now, for instance, that on the 21st of March there's going to be Human Rights Day. We know now that on the 18th of July is going to be the Mandela Day. So we should be starting planning now. Yes, I agree with you. But I will ask Upakamani to respond to the questions of the line function, exactly where does the process start, and the subsidization of the provinces. Unfortunately, he also comes in from the heritage sector. So the heritage unit in the department, he might have some understanding of where we are in terms of transforming the heritage institutions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The process of name standardization, of name change, starts when a local municipal, let me say an authority, because although individuals can apply for a name, they must prove what authority they have. If you're an individual, you cannot apply for a name if you don't have certain authority in the area where you're proposing change. So you need to show authority in terms of the application form, and you must, in the application form, say why you want the name to be changed. The example that I give, in most instances, it will be municipalities that take a political decision collectively for a reason known to that area. Or it's a post office, and the reason is very clear, they're building a new post office. They start the process by then filling in a form, and then have a stamp that the township has been declared, and that comes from the authorities in that area. And the process then goes to the Provincial Geographical Names Committee once it has moved from the local level. And the Local Geographical Names Committee's job is to make sure that first, that person who has applied has the authority. It's not just an individual who just decided out of malice that I want to rename Cape Town. You must show authority that you have, and that you have consulted at where you have the authority. if you are a municipal manager, we know that the authority comes from the executive mayor, who then has the vote of the majority in the city of the area. And then they fill in the form, they take it to the Provincial Geographical Names Committee, who will then check whether indeed you did consult, whether indeed people in the area want that name change. Because it is possible that the name sometimes is, let me say, is a name that does not reflect the majority, but people just happen to like it. And there's nothing you can do about that. If the majority likes the name, then the name stays. The only time when the minister can interfere is if the name is offensive in terms of race, gender, and ethnicity. The law allows the minister to say that this, in terms of our law, not okay. So it needs to be changed. So that's where the process starts, and it ends with the National Geographical Names Council, which also does its own checking. And it involves the Department of Land Affairs, mapping and survey. They check the latitude, the longitude of that place. They check whether it doesn't exist in a map already. And then it's the people of Pansal who check the language, whether it's not written badly in terms of language, in terms of orthography. And then the council will then, with all this information, even the information of people objecting is also presented to the council as is. So the council will know that there is a letter of objection. They will apply their mind with all that information, and then they will advise the minister, who can also reject what is recommended to her. She applies her mind not as an administrator, but as a politician, and looks at all the issues of national unity, and then she then applies her mind. Even then, the Act allows for a 30-day period where people can even object to the minister's decision after 30 days. So there is always an allowance for objection. After 30 days, people can tell the minister, no, we think that you didn't apply your mind correctly, please consider A, B, C. The problem that we have where people end up in court is because they don't use this 30-day period. Once it has lapsed, the Act doesn't allow them to object after 30 days, then they go to the High Court, because the High Court can take an objection even after 10 years. But then it then slows the process quite considerably. I'm glad you asked about the funding. We don't do it anymore. We stopped. We were actually instructed to stop by Treasury, because we were informed that the Division of Revenue Act does not allow one sphere of government to pay for another sphere of government. And therefore, we then called, the minister called the MECs to inform them that they should please take over the funding of the provincial structure. Fortunately, they are getting more than 200,000 that we're giving them. I think an average of over R1 million for just the administration of the council, which is, I think, sufficient, because the members are not full-time. They only get money for just travel, allowances, overnight accommodation. Where there is a problem is that they do not have dedicated officials to do research, to assist. It's usually people who work in arts and culture doing other things. And then part of their job is to convene meetings of the geographical names committees. This is where, in the slide, we said that there are challenges with capacity. And this is what we, at national, there is a dedicated secretariat of officials who deal with geographical names. But at provincial, it's people who do museums, they do language, they do everything. And the committees are not served correctly in that regard. The transformation area is problematic. We have been correctly been accused that our museums pale, male, and aging in terms of the management. And I think it's a correct assessment of people to say that we, for some reason, we only started after 1994 to inject new blood in terms of our institution. And the training has not been relevant in terms of universities. There has not been arts and culture management degree. I don't think there is even at the moment. You find that there is now a post-grad diploma at UCT on museum and heritage studies, which you do after everything else, and then you just do this diploma. So it's also part of the problem. However, there has been an audit that we have made of all the skills in the heritage sector, from the cleaner up to a curator to a museum director, so that we can then address this based on research information. At the top, the CEOs have transformed. But as you know, that the CEO alone is not the institution. All the curators are still the way they are. So we take the criticism. I think the DG will have to note that and deal with that as the head of the institution. But we agree. It's valid criticism.
Yes, thank you. I think I'm just reminded about my conversation with the minister yesterday about Vietnam again. She says that there is a University of Heritage in Vietnam that focuses in heritage studies, and that people study up to PhD level studying heritage, you know. So I think we need to engage with, and I need to engage with Ms. Metcalf around the institutions of higher learning and how the Department of Higher Education can assist us to consolidate that, because there is, it's true. There's a lack of, even when we want to attract, we have advertised positions, if when we want to attract people with skills in the relevant areas, it's a challenge in the country, because we don't have that base or that pool from which to draw. But yes, I note that's something that we need to look into. But also, we have tried in terms of transforming the institutions, in terms of the Act, Cultural Institutions Act. There was an amalgamation of institutions in Cape Town, which were renamed Iziko Museum, which was another way of transforming the institutions. They were previously separate institutions, and then they got amalgamated into one, and then a CEO was appointed to head them. But also, even in the northern area, Pretoria and Johannesburg, there's an institution there that was formed, amalgamating a number of museums. Now it's been since renamed the Tsong. There's talks, it's still at the early stage, that we will do perhaps the same around Bloemfontein and come up with another flagship where we would have museums under one management. But it's still in the discussion and planning phases. We haven't even taken it further. Coming to Honorable Mr. Njisela, it's interesting when you talk about getting rid of offensive names. The president went to, I hope I'm going to say this right in this talk, Ingquza. Now, Ingquza is somewhere in Mampondwe. They were commemorating the 50 years of the uprisings of the Pondos in 1960. And then in isiZulu, this word Ngquza, it could be a little bit offensive.
Yeah.
Such that the president said, I will come back and sit down with the people of this area and find out how did it come about that this area is named Ngquza, which is different from, which is offensive in isiZulu. So, it's quite interesting, those names. And when you talk about names being given by residents, I know that in Islanda there was a place called Ferchenuch. It's far enough from town, so you have to travel to get to town. It's Ferchenuch. We take note of your the fact that the Act has to be clear on how we measure the sufficient consultation, and also the fact that people must accompany their leaders to the events, because yes, although we do have political leaders that are represented in Parliament, or leaders of political parties represented in Parliament talking in those areas, their constituencies are not, most of the time, are not there with them. With regards to the Khoisan people, Mashivas,
yes, you are giving us an instruction to take care of them. We will endeavor to take care of the question. But we've tried. I think, I don't know whether you would like to elaborate on what we have done. We have not tried. We have a program that also looks after the interests of the Khoisan people. Do you want to talk to that?
Yes. Briefly, we do. We've always had, since 94, there's always been a Khoisan legacy project in the department, which has always been fully funded. It resulted in the reinterment of the remains of Sarah Batma. It was part of the project of government. We have even gone to as far as we are building a multicultural center in Hengi in memory of Dasi September, that will have entertainment places, theaters, it will have places for women to do indigenous art and for children also to study. So there is a standing legacy project on the Khoisan. The reason for the delay that you don't see much development has been the dynamics within the community, in terms of many communities within the communities themselves, and the contestations in terms of recognition of traditional authority, in terms of who the government should deal with. We deal with about 10 communities, and then we find that other communities will then say that these are not the correct communities, these are not the real first communities. But Honorable Shepherdson is much aware of the dynamics in the area. I think that is one of the reasons why she has raised the question. I will concede that in terms of naming, we should do more. We do have names in terms of the Khoisan, and you will know that I think this government recognizes the status of the Khoisan in terms of the coat of arms, the Cape Karake in terms of the national coat of arms, which really puts them at the heart of being South African. But in terms of naming, yes, we have not done enough, except for the fact that in the Eastern Cape, there are a lot of names, like the Kuha, they originate from Cape Karma, they originate from the Khoisan, but it's not that in the new naming we have included them. The dilemma that we have is that although we would like to, the Act does not allow the minister to suggest anything. So maybe it should be in terms of our political leaders to recommend people to come up with names in the Khoisan language so that the minister can also approve them. But I agree, maybe there is a need for extra measures and not do business as usual in terms of the Khoisan people.
I think lastly, Chairperson, from the Honorable Mema Marutwa. Mema Marutwa spoke on the issue of indigenous knowledge systems, that we need to tap into the indigenous ways of doing things. You will be pleased to know that the minister has closed the Heritage Month on the 30th of September by holding a seminar on national living treasures. We're looking at people who are still living, who then will be transferring those skills and those knowledge, and that knowledge, sorry, to the young ones. So we have recognized some of the living treasures in various genres of arts, culture, and heritage, and they really appreciated that. I remember who met Dorothy Masuku being beside herself for being honored by the minister as a living treasure. And that project is aimed at ensuring that we do not lose what we have in terms of indigenous knowledge, and that it gets transferred. It's unfortunate that you can't download it into a DVD, because it's up here, and if people leave, they go with it. So we need to find ways of how do we retain that knowledge and get it from our living treasure. Yes, we acknowledge the fact that we should be using mainly radio, especially if we are to reach rural areas. And I think we try, and we also use some community radio stations. What seems to be expensive, back to Honorable Kuno, in the media, is that the radio slots and TV, sorry, the TV slots especially, are very expensive. You have to have funds to advertise your events. But I suppose when we go to cabinet and ask for more funding, then we'll be able to promote and advertise the events. I think, as a in conclusion, Chairperson, I would like Pagamani to talk to Mayor's question around will commemorations and celebrations not be divisive if they are decentralized? Because that's your question. If then we decentralize them, will they not be divisive?
I think as officials, we do not really have answers. I think one of the benefits of having yourselves at the committee to advise us in terms of your experience. We are of the view that we should not, as I said, have a one-shoe-fits-all approach. We should have national days that we rally as a nation. I think Freedom Day, you need to rally as a nation. You need to decide on that. Yeah, June 16th, you do need to prick the consciousness of the youth as a collective. Yes, where we are suggesting maybe a new approach is that not every national day should be the same, because then people they will say no, it's the same every heritage, everything is the same, and then they start not going. But we agree that we should have rallies. But where it allows for people to also take charge of national days, we should also allow them at where the situation fits. Although I agree with you, it's not something that is easy that can be done overnight. I think we should just be advised by yourself as well, and maybe by cabinet. But I think we should differentiate between days, Heritage Day and Day of Reconciliation and Freedom Day. Not look the same. As you would know, that during Freedom Day, very ceremonial, there's a military parade and then the fly past, because we national orders as well. But it should not be the same that we do the same thing even during another day, during Women's Day. Women's Day should be different. It should not be the same. Like. I'm glad that we experimented with a reenactment of a march, which was something different. I think other days we must also focus on the theme of that day.
Don't forget
Thank you very much. I believe unless otherwise, if members are still those burning questions, but the explanations really clarify everything. Unless, if there's another one which is very burning. Honorable Kuno.
I'm sorry, it's not a question. It was such a suggestion. You know, Honorable Muruta said something earlier on, very important, you know, giving history about Pastor Ham and, you know, the African cultures vis-a-vis religion and all that. We have that knowledge. You know, there are so many people. I know that in Rustenburg, there's a man who will tell you about history. You are talking about Udorosi Masuku and, you know, the knowledge that is up here. That I think if we gather that knowledge, and as we train, you know, when you want formal trainings and all that, let that be part of the curriculum. And let, you know, our people are out there. They have this knowledge, but they don't have degrees. And they cannot be sidelined because of that. We know the problems of the past and all that. See how is it that we can put them, you know, and make them part of the process. The people who are working in these museums or heritage institutions, they've been there, they've been working. Why don't you train them and make sure that they have those skills and they can be in managerial positions? You know, somebody was saying in Bloemfontein, they resigned this, you said white pale male. No, it's not pale men.
Pale
men and aging. They resign after that, they come back as consultants or something. But they're always part of the process. So there will never be transformation unless we do something drastic. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think the officials now have a bigger package to take home. where you'll be knowing that whenever, because when you're gone, we sit down to analyze and come up with certain issues. And we say, rush to Cape Town. You do, they say. Because we would like to have more knowledge than the people outside. Not that we're claiming to have one. But knowledge, I believe, is empowerment to everybody. Because if we're us down there not having answers, it appears that the department is relaxed, and then people complaining that this is not happening. Why? We don't have answers. But partly now, we know what to tell people and what they should have to be doing. Meanwhile, we're going down to them. So for today, don't say we're cruel to you. We're still going to be more cruel. The cruelty is that we want to build this country together. It's not one man's show. Together we can do more. So for now, I think we can release you because as a committee we still have some items to attend to. And we're agreeing that when we call you, you rush. When the call crosses, it means that the dawn has now arrived. Thank you very much. I'll request the members of the honorable members of the committee to remain behind. Thank you very much.